Hey there, out in podcast land. This is Alex Lokes, and this is the August episode of Classic Camera Revival. Now, we talk a lot about used gear and used cameras, and some of us are super lucky at getting great deals, but the simple fact is that most of the cameras that we shoot with these days are used. And even though you can still buy film cameras manufactured new, they're often prohibitively expensive. I'm looking at you, Nikon and Leica. But you know what? You don't have to buy new to get a great deal. So we're going to rock around the table here and talk about some hints, tips, tricks, what to look for and what to avoid when looking at buying used gear.
Coming to you live from Toronto, Canada, this is the Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to our show.
And we have podcast sign. We're going to start off with something that is a bit testy when it comes to, especially at camera shows. And it has to do with a little bit of World War II, a little bit of the Soviets, a little bit of German, and that is fake Leicas. And to bring us up to speed on these Ukrainian goodies is John.
Thanks, Alex. Yeah, and I'm going to talk about the sad fact of counterfeit screw mount Leica cameras. The fact is that the early Soviet era Feds and Zorkis are basically copies of the old Barnack Leica, specifically the Leica 2. And so what a lot of people in the Ukraine, Soviet Union, figured out is, hey, I could get these cameras here over cheap, strip them down, grind off the engraving, and make them look gold-plated in some cases, and put Leica engraving and Leica markings on it. And hey, I can start selling, air quotes, Leica cameras, and make a killing with the poor saps in the West. And then they figured, well, we can go even further than that. Instead of just copying these and making run-of-the-mill Leicas, let's start making special, rare ones. And so ones, for example, that have the 1936 Berlin Olympics marking on them, or the submarine fleet.
Kriegsmarine.
I know, or it's
and Luftwaffe, yes.
Or the gold-plated snakeskin, which is also very popular. And so if you go on eBay, although I will say now eBay is getting better. Most of these ones are now being advertised as copies. But if you weren't careful back in the day, especially if you're dealing over eBay or like not in person, you know, you're paying a premium for a Leica camera and you get stuck with a Zorki or a Fed. Now, to be fair to the Zorki or the Feds, these are not bad cameras, especially if you got a good Zorki or a good Fed. They're in good condition. They can take very good pictures. But, sorry, they are not the same as a Leica. Now, the good thing is, it is not that hard to tell the difference. And if you Google how to spot a fake Leica on the internet, you will find all kinds of helpful pages that will show you pictures exactly what to look for. I'm not going to go through all the stuff because I don't need to.
We'll make sure that link is included in our episode notes.
But just a couple of things like that. And the most important thing is use common sense. If someone from the Ukraine is advertising a gold-plated, I think it's the Luxus Leica, for $200 US, let's put this in perspective. Three of these cameras were made by Leica. Two have disappeared. There is one in existence. I don't think someone is going to sell it for $200 unless Alex was walking by a garage sale, in which case he'd probably talk them down to about 20.
Oh, easily.
So, or anything like the wood grain, yep, gold-plated, shark skin, commemorative engraving, it is fake, 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 fake. From a technical point of view, things you can check easily. You take the lens off and look at the shape of the rangefinder cam. On Leica cameras, they are round. on the former Soviet Union cameras, like the Zorki or the Fed, they are they're more flat or a wedge shape. The Leica D, which was the template, or Leica 2, which was the template for these fakes, did not have slow speeds. So if someone's trying to sell you a Leica 3F that doesn't have a slow speed dial, run, don't walk. And again, I could spend a lot of time going down the list, but the link will be in the show notes. It is not hard to spot a fake, so that's good news. One thing I will talk about buying Leica in general, the older lenses, beautiful as they are, like we're talking like the Elmars, they tend to develop haze over the years.
Yeah.
So you have to factor a cleaning into purchasing them. Also, their early coated lenses, I'd stay away from the Sumar. They're not the greatest lens anyway. But the Sumitar probably has the softest lens coating known to mankind.
Oh, yeah.
So the odds are there will be cleaning marks. So for stuff like that, if you can get a look at it in advance, it's in your best interest because they're fragile lenses. And hey, at this point, we're talking 67-year-old technology.
Yeah. And the number one way to spot a fake Leica is look for Nazi markings on it. If it is marked with the Nazi eagle, well, frankly, A, I wouldn't shoot it out of respect for the victims of the Holocaust, and B, you know it's a fake, hands down. And no matter how hard someone will argue with you, unless you're doing a Second World War German soldier impression, don't worry about it.
If I could throw in one thing, because I think it's a really neat story, I won't go into super details about the Nazi angle, is it's not well known that Leica did what sort of a freedom train in the Second World War, because they saw what was happening to the victims of the Holocaust, what was starting to happen. So they would arrange for like Jewish employees to somehow get posted overseas. Yeah. So they were basically doing their bit to save as many people as they could in their company. So
Leica did it, Voigtlander did it, and so did Frank and Hedeke. All the major optical definitely did that.
So I think hats off to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And John brought up an excellent point about looking at the optics, and to talk more on that is Mike.
Yeah, optics. Now we're talking about the main bread and butter of any camera, and it doesn't matter what camera you have. If you have poor optics, which I have unfortunately been burned a couple times on, you will really suffer when it comes to shooting. Now, granted, there's a lot of people out there that shoot pinhole. They don't have any worries when it comes to optics. However, the rest of us that shoot with glass lenses, I'm not even going to touch on plastic because who cares? Glass lenses, if there's a little bit of cleaning marks on the front, big deal. Don't shoot it into the sun. Invest in a lens hood, because a little bit of cleaning marks on the front can save you a lot of money down the line. I mean, if you look at, let's just say, real mint lenses, not eBay mint, because we all know how that goes down. Real mint, beautiful lenses. Let's take an Elmar, for instance, that has perfect optics, perfect coating, no haze. You're looking easily $300, $400, $500, $600, $700 for this lens. And yet, if it has some cleaning marks, all of a sudden you're looking at $200 to $300. That's a massive savings. And if you just invest in a lens hood or don't shoot into the sun, or at extremely high apertures, that is true, you will not notice anything. In fact, your image will look exactly like the same one that had perfect coatings. So the next thing, having cleaning marks is one thing, scratches are another. I have a lens that does have a scratch on it. Actually, I've got a couple of them that have a scratch. I even have a lens that the front element is separating, so you can see a lot of balsam separation, and it has a really, really beautiful rainbow effect on the lens and a metallic sheen, which is really cool. kind of like if you took motor oil and dropped it in water, or gasoline and dropped it in water. That's how you can tell that you've got lens separation. I've shot this lens, bright sunlight, you'd never know. You would never know. And I never would have bought a lens that had separation. This came as a kit with my Contaflex lenses. I bought 2.35s, the f4 and the f3.2, and the 1.15. And unfortunately, I never got the 85, but I did get it eventually. And the f4.35 had really bad separation. I thought, well, how bad can it be? I'm going to go out and I'm going to shoot it. Sure, it looks terrible when you look at it, but I didn't notice any hint of difference at all. I shot the lens and I said, why was I running away from these lenses before? Other than the fact that really they don't look good, but you wouldn't notice. And then I shot on my Fed 2 an Instar 26M. And I have two copies of this lens. And there's a reason I have two copies. The first one had some cleaning marks on the front. And I've never worried about cleaning marks on the front element, but it's on the rear element as well. And that is a major problem because the rear element helps with the light collection onto the film plane. And it really, really focuses the light. That's why if you ever look at vignetting, just imagine that with cleaning marks on the back of the lens where the light's now starting to spread, and you get a complete loss of contrast in the center of your image. And I have many images that I can share, both that I have shot on the Leica 3A and on the Fed 2. I thought it was pinholes in the shutter on the 3A, which turned out to be wrong. In fact, the 3A was perfect condition as far as the shutter curtains went. And then I thought, oh, well, maybe there's a problem with my Fed 2. So I took the lens off, stuck it in the sun for a good 3-4 hours, took a picture, advanced the shutter so that I could see if it's the first curtain or second curtain that's got the pinholes. No, I got light leak around the curtain for that. So that negated the fact that there may have been pinholes in the curtain. Then I looked at the lens. And that's when I realized where the problem lay. And I thought it was a problem with the black coating that they put on the edges of the lens. But no, it was because of the cleaning marks both at front and rear. And the rear is the major problem. And I got really bad loss of contrast in the center of the images. So I replaced the lens. I got an Instar 61N. I got a newer 26M that did not have the added wonderful cleaning marks on the back, and there was a massive difference in the lenses and massive difference in the images. I put it on the Leica and they were tack sharp and perfect. There was no light leak, nothing, even on the Fed 2. So cleaning marks on the rear I would steer away from. The next thing is fungus. We all love a few mushrooms, I'm sure, but not in our lenses. However, I have a Kodak Retina that I got, a 3C that has a little bit of fungus in the lens. And I mean, I've shot it towards the sun. I've got some beautiful lens flaring, like not the lens flared and I lost contrast. No, just the typical beautiful lens flare that you'd expect. And you would never know that this lens has a little bit of fungus in it. And I don't really have too much of worry with fungus. If it's small, it's not an issue. It's if your lens looks like a mushroom farm, I'd steer away. And haze too.
If I could jump, one thing I would say about fungus though is that like unlike cleaning marks, which you know if you're careful, they'll never get worse. Fungus can grow over time, depending on humidity and things like that.
Yes.
And it's also not unknown for fungus to spread to other gear. It is the promiscuous lens defect. It likes to sleep around.
Yeah, that is very true. And speaking of the fact that it can grow, I'd highly recommend silica packs in your camera bags.
Definitely.
Which will really cut down on humidity. And let's face it, those things are practically free. Usually if you buy anything, the silica packs are in there, especially electronic gear. Or shoes, just toss them in your camera bag. Big deal. Don't throw them away. Keep them. They're very, very handy.
Don't eat them.
Very true. Don't eat them. And the last thing to really touch base on is haze. And I've used lenses with a little bit of haze, and you get a little bit of contrast loss, but it's nothing that you can't juice up a bit in post. I've shot into the sun with them, and that's when you really get a lot of contrast loss. And if the haze is really bad, you can always use it as a soft focus lens.
Yes. I actually have a pre-World War II Zeiss Jena Tessar that I got on a very beat-up Contax II rangefinder. The camera itself was shot, but the lens has just that nice touch of haze, which gave beautiful images. I shot it on... I had a random snow day where my work was closed, and it was also expired film day, so I went out and shot some 90s era T-Max 100 and with this Zeiss Jena Tessar, and a bit of haze, but no big deal. The lens performed beautifully, so I've just kept the lens.
Yeah, I've had a couple lenses I've shot with haze, and it's never been an issue for me. The other thing a lot of people worry about also is dented filter rings. Oh, the amount of dented filter rings I have, it gets a little frustrating. And it's usually not so much that I bought them that way. It's because I decided I'm not going to stick a UV filter on the front. And oops, I didn't realize that I still had the camera hanging around my neck, and I just bumped it.
No. One of the main sources, other than going through private sellers or businesses to purchase used gear, is eBay. eBay has taken the world by storm. And here to decode eBay is Mr. Bill Smith.
Thanks, Alex. We're spoiled where we live here in Southern Ontario. We've got a bunch of places we can go to for used gear, like Burlington Camera. There's a couple of retailers in Toronto I won't name. But they're great people. But for those of us who shoot film, but we don't live near a large metropolitan area, eBay becomes your new best friend. If you don't want to shoot through, buy through B&H or KEH, eBay is where you go. And there are sellers on eBay. Some of them have been around a long time. Some of them are just like you and I who just want to unload some extra gear. Or you got people who are estate pickers who, hey, I found this. I have no idea what it is. It kind of looks clean. Here you go. And you have to sort of, there's a very much a caveat emptor. In other words, do your research before you buy.
Definitely.
And this doesn't matter whether you're going through, going to the Burlington Camera or on eBay or KH. Say if you're looking to buy an SLR from the 70s, take a quick trip to photography in Malaysia and go through and understand what you're looking at, because that information will help you when you start deciphering eBay descriptions. Now, over the past year or two, I've noticed either there's been a change in the eBay algorithm, but I'm noticing a lot of Japanese sellers entering the market. And again, a lot of like really nice gear magically appearing. But here's the problem. They're not native English speakers. They're running their description through a translation app.
Yep.
So you have to kind of be very careful and read between the lines. So while people say, oh yeah, you know, a little bit of touch of fungus and some haze may not be a bad thing, bear in mind, you're dealing with somebody whose English is not their first language. So there might be a loss of nuance. So again, the other thing is you want to look at, when you're looking at eBay, look at the photos. If they say the lens looks mint and then you look into the optics and it looks like a science experiment, it ain't mint.
Yeah.
Take a pass. Just strike it from the watch list and move on. Buying from Japanese sellers on eBay, I've bought some bodies from them and I've never had an issue. of course, one or two, of course, you need to sort of budget a CLA when you are buying on eBay.
Definitely.
There are reputable sellers in North America, like Rokas Photo Video. They're out of LA. And then there's like Blue Pen Cameras, I think out of like Minnesota. I've bought a couple of Nikon bodies through them that they actually overhauled. Not an issue whatsoever. And there are, of course, Rolly dealers in Europe. And of course, you got dealers like KEH who have an eBay presence.
Yep.
Again, I would also look, another thing you want to look at is their rating. I generally don't buy from people anything less than 99%, I will take a pass on. I guess just, some people will probably think I'm being overly cautious. I'd rather say, hey, it's my money. I don't know who these people are. They're on the other side of the world or other side of the country, Antarctica. It's not like you can go to their house or place of business and saying, hey, you ripped me off. I'd like my money back. You've got a sort of, there is a strong level of trust. And if you don't have that, how should I call it, warm, comfy feeling in your belly that, hey, this is going to be a great transaction, take a pass.
Definitely. And the one thing you really have to learn how to do is generally how to spot a bad deal, right?
Oh, of course.
Sometimes if it's too good to be true, chances are it is.
There was just one more thing I really wanted to touch base on with used gear, bad deals, and stuff like that when it comes to optics. There's two types of apertures that we all know of. There's auto aperture and preset aperture. If you look and you see one that says it's a preset aperture camera and there's oil on the blades, as long as the blades close when you turn the aperture ring, it's not an issue. Because you spin the dial down, it closes for you. You don't have to worry about springs and the blades being slow. Yeah. Auto aperture, if there is oil on the blades, if you're not getting a really, really good deal, walk away.
Definitely.
The problem with oil on the blades, it may sound like a good thing. You don't want oil on the blades. You want oil on the mechanism, but not the blades.
Yeah.
The blades have to be dry. They have to be very free moving.
Definitely.
As soon as it's oil, it adds a friction, much higher friction element, which will slow the blades down a lot. And if it comes to the point that they're closing down and they're still in their closed travel after your shutter's already fired, you've blown your exposure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we could literally go on for hours on this topic, but probably the most important thing to take out of this is research, research, research. There's tons of resources online on cameras, on optics. Sometimes you can fix them yourself. Sometimes a camera is a really great deal. It's just a little bit dirty. You'd be amazed at how many lenses are passed by because they just have a scratched up and filthy UV filter on the front of them, and the optics are brilliant underneath. So, That about wraps it up for us. My name's Alex Loke, saying sometimes the cameras are good second time around.
I'm sorry, this month I'm a man of few words.
This is John Meadows. Remember, if they say it's a gold Leica, it's fool's gold.
This is Donna Bataxi, and if you haven't been out there shooting film, why aren't you doing it?
This is Mike Bataxi, and remember, if you can't see through it, you're not looking hard enough.